You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, here on the America Out Loud Network. You have two shining examples of hosts today. My friend Ray Dietrich, former law enforcement officer, entrepreneur, all-around good dude, and me, Randy Sutton, your favorite host of Blue Lives Radio. Ray, thanks so much for coming back on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Randy. It's always a good time, man.
It is always a good time. You know, we could literally talk forever about the stuff that's going on in law enforcement. So why don't we get started? I know you've got some great stuff to talk about. Why don't you lead it off today?
Sure. So let's start off with a little bit of Dick's Sporting Goods. So Dick's Sporting Goods was the one who, after the Parkland shooting, they took AR-15s and so-called assault-style rifles off their sales, right? They took them off the shelf. And just recently, this last week, they disclosed that they literally sent all of those rifles off to become scrap and recycled. $5 million worth of rifles, many, many, many of them AR-15s. So my question is, why wouldn't they donate them to law enforcement or the military or, you know, a million other good uses for those weapons? They are so anti-Second Amendment that they destroy them. Like, what do you think about that?
It's shocking. So they could have outfitted pretty much every police department in the country with long guns, which in turn would save the department's money and save police officers' lives. And instead, they clearly were doing this to make a political point. This is all about dollars and cents. Yeah, they lost $5 million in inventory, but they're betting on, well, look, we're the sporting goods store with a conscience.
That's exactly it. They're playing to the audience. They're playing to the crowd. They're getting political. And you know what? Like, since when do sporting goods stores get into politics, right? A business that's probably profited off firearms for a very long time, assault style rifles for a very long time. All of a sudden now they're better than everybody. And they're going to tell you that, you know, that guns are bad. So I'm not sure what's going on over there. I'm not spending my money there anymore. They could have helped a lot of officers, especially in these smaller departments, Randy. You know, some of these 20, 30, 50 man agencies, they don't have the funds that these big departments have. You know, I'm used to going into an armory and seeing 40 ARs. You know, there's agencies that don't have it. They're having to buy their own stuff. So I think it's a huge fail, and I think it's all about politics.
You know, when I saw the article about them destroying those weapons, I thought to myself, I said, well, that sounds like an idiotic business decision to me. But you know, you hit it right on the head. I didn't even think about how those weapons in the hands of the good guys could really make a significant difference. And for them not to even make an attempt to let those weapons be utilized for the right things, if you're going to get rid of them, I think it's outrageous. I really do. I think what they've done is an anti-law enforcement move, quite honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree.
So, what politics, once again. So talking about politics, how about, we talked about this before, but Minneapolis, this mayor, Fry, whatever the hell his name is, he's anti-law enforcement. That goes back to, you know, even prior to his election. He's shown that over and over again. But he's so politically, he's suffering from that Trump derangement syndrome that we hear about. And so he has ordered, through the chief of police, of course, who by all reports is a pretty decent guy, but he's pulling the strings, the mayor, and he orders the police officers of Minneapolis that they cannot show support for President Trump at an upcoming rally by wearing their uniform. Whereas in the last political presidential elections with Obama and with Clinton, these officers, these same officers, were actually ordered to stand behind these candidates in a which is political theater, pretending that they supported this guy, these you know, Clinton and Obama. And here they want to do it. They want to support their president, but they are ordered not to.
It's absolutely crazy, man. And you know, the fun part of this story is Google, you know, President Obama Minneapolis police, and look at the pictures, because they're going to come up right away on the images. Look at the pictures of the coppers standing behind this guy. They look like it's like the most staged communist picture ever. They look miserable standing there.
They look like POWs. Yes. They look like POWs.
It's crazy. And you know, hats off to the union out there. I know you know. I think it's Lieutenant Kroll.
Yes,
who's running the show out there. They put together a campaign for T-shirts, cops that support Trump, and I believe they crashed their website, sold out, and sold tons and tons of them. So they have a rally coming up very shortly. I think it's today as we're recording, but I cannot wait to see what that looks like with all of those cops in their bright red shirts. Cops for Trump. And look, this isn't just about the Trump thing, right? It's not, hey, it's a Republican thing. This is just weaponizing police for political purposes. This is a political mayor a mayor getting into politics, trying to get into the national level, trying to get in sound bites, trying to be relevant and creating the situation. So it's okay for him to weaponize the police and use them when it's his side of the spectrum in politics, but when it's the other side, absolutely not. I even read that they're going out of their way to and ordering Minneapolis officers to work the lines of the actual event for the Trump event and reduce the amount of interviews. Like, that's the news that's breaking today on that. It's crazy. Minneapolis is a mess.
Not only that, but he has also ordered that the security fees, outrageously expensive. I think they're charging them like $350,000, right? And I've also heard that they are limiting the egress and ingress in order to limit the number of people who can attend.
It's great. I mean, you're weaponizing the cops again, like literally, like who's going to have to enforce those things? Like, how does that work? It's scary that they're trying to change the optics so much of an event. Like, why would you be so worried about something if you're so powerful on your side of the spectrum? And you know, you're definitely going to impeach this guy and all these things. Like, why? What are you so worried about then? Why would you make this a bigger story? I don't get it.
So here's what I'm going to forecast. And I would bet you that there's going to be, from what I understand, Antifa is already gearing up to do their usual violent, you know, attacking of people that don't agree with their political viewpoints. Here's my worry and my prediction is that the police officers that are assigned to it are going to be placed in areas where they will not be able to be effective, and they're going to be ordered to stand down, if you will, like the cops in Seattle and Portland were ordered to. I hope this chief's got a bigger set on him than the chief in Portland and Seattle, because you know, there can be some serious violence at this thing.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to basically press the police into being out of position and in a stand down position, you know, It's just going to get people hurt. It happened in Portland. You got reporters getting hit in the face with locks and bottles and all those things. You have people just being attacked because they're wearing a certain, you know, shirt or hat. And that seems to be okay on the left. So Antifa, man, if they don't become a domestic terror organization soon, I don't know what it's going to take. I saw a YouTube video yesterday, Randy, on Antifa, and it's three masked guys sitting down. They've got Antifa flags around them. They're in Syria, fighting guerrilla warfare, a full-blown in boots on the ground, flying Antifa flags, fighting in Syria. So I'm not sure exactly what it's going to take to get them, dealt with, but it's about time.
The domestic terrorist organization designation should absolutely be assigned to this group of morons. Talk about morons.
Why do I know where you're going to go with this already? I think I already know.
This happened in Florida. I don't know if you saw this. Last week, a Broward County Sheriff's deputy, he was being honored as Deputy of the Month. And he was called up, and the mayor is there and the city council, and they call him up to give him his award. And as he accepts it, and as he's walking away, a council member calls him back. He says, "You don't remember me, but you arrested me falsely, and you're a bad cop, and you're corrupt, and you're all this and all that," right in front of everybody there. And I got to tell you, I saw it. My blood pressure went through the roof. And this officer had the steely nerve to just look at him and then walk away. I probably would have punched him in his face.
I probably would have lost my job that night, Randy.
Yeah, I mean, you and me both. At the time, the other city council people, they basically defended the officer and to rebuke the councilman. But now, guess what? Colleagues refused to reprimand commissioner who bashed deputy at the award ceremony.
It's crazy, man. This deputy probably had his family there. I mean, just think of that. He's probably got, if he's got kids, like that's what happens at these award kind of ceremonies, right? You bring your family, you bring your kids, you bring your wife, whoever. And he gets to be disrespected by this councilman after doing a great job. I believe he was after an international murder warrant. Some high profile cases, what kicked off Deputy of the Year and what they were speaking of. And then you have this councilman come in and talk about a case that's 4 years old. Now, my question is, doesn't this councilman understand due process? I'm sure that he probably complained about it at the time and it was looked into, right? If it was a false arrest, right?
I'm sure you're right. Here's what he said. This is what this punk said. "It's good to see you again," he told the unsuspecting deputy. "You probably don't remember me, but you're the police officer who falsely arrested me 4 years ago. You lied on the police report. I believe you're a rogue police officer. You're a bad police officer, and you don't deserve to be here." Can you freaking imagine this?
That is unacceptable. And just not the platform or the time and place for it. You're going to choose an award ceremony to make that kind of allegation and to bring that into public light. And why? Because now we're talking about it. Like that's why they do this stuff, man. It's driving me insane. This entire country is obsessed with getting clicks and getting their name out in social. And I think they just try to be the most outrageous so that they can get those things and become some kind of fame within politics. It's out of control now.
Well, and these other city council people, they woofed pretty big at right after it happened. Then they don't have the guts to stand up and do the right thing here. So once again, these politicians reveal themselves to be the lowlifes that they are. And this is another shining example of political leadership.
It's a scary time to not be on their side. Like if you're not leaning left in your agency or yourself, it's almost as if you're targeted and attacked even more. Police are the number one target right now. Like I just see it. The war on police is just—it's just getting started, and it's just getting worse. As far as being politicized, it used to be the bad guys and the activists. Yeah, sure, they all hate us, whatever. But now we're getting into talking points of major political candidates, like with an anti-police bashing narrative, and it's just trickling down. Now the councilmen are doing it, the mayors are doing it, the DAs are, everyone's just jumping on a board and following what the top Dems are doing, and it's just disgusting.
It is. It's pathetic. But I did get kind of a smile on my face when I read this headline: Minneapolis police officer challenging Ilhan Omar for congressional seat says she's a quote absentee landlord, unquote.
I saw that, and we posted that up on one of our pages. It had like 2,000 shares in a day. Anything I can do to help with that campaign, you just reach out to me, man. I'm just saying. I hope that they start pedaling backwards from losing their minds in that state. There's a lot of things going on, and we're talking about Minneapolis weekly with anti-police things happening, cases happening. You have Ilhan Omar out there. It's a mess, man. I don't know what happened in that state, but I sure hope someone like that is a serious candidate that gets out there in front of us.
He sounds serious. So his name is Chris Kelly. He's collected 11 military medals as a 27-year veteran of the United States Army and Army Reserves, clocked more than 36,000 hours patrolling Minnesota streets as a 20-year veteran of the Minneapolis Police Department, and now he's running for Congress. Now, you know, everybody was saying that Omar was elected in a landslide, but what is little known is that only 37% of the people voted.
Right.
So they were able to, you know, basically, you know, get out the people that were activists for her. So I'm hoping that this officer, who is clearly more qualified than Omar could be and have even thought about, let's hope that this guy unseats her and brings some normalcy to Minnesota.
100%. I mean, there's 60% of the vote to go get still. Hopefully, the good old silent majority will show up and make this right.
Wouldn't that be nice for a change?
Oh, I would love not to speak her name ever again.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Well, I do want to speak her name, because isn't she the one that married her brother?
Yeah, and then she married a brother, and now she's divorcing her different husband. I'm not sure. There's all kinds of stuff going on there. It's very confusing.
And they elected her Congress.
She's got like three, like what's equivalent to like internal affairs investigations going in Congress already. Campaign finance issues. There's all kinds of issues with her. They're a mess. All the squad is just completely out of control.
Oh yeah. Oh, let's talk about our friend AOC.
Oh, AOC. She's one of my favorites to talk about, man. I she's always a good time.
She's come up with a novel concept, hasn't she?
Yeah, you know what? She came up with this all on her own. You know, I'll give her credit for that part at least. She just basically wants to abolish prisons because cages are bad. A cage is a cage is a cage, and humans don't belong in them. Direct quote. So, not sure what the solution is there, but she's tweeting it out. You know, here's one of the tweets. Mass incarceration is our American reality. It is a system whose logic evolved from the same lineage as Jim Crow, American apartheid, and slavery. To end it, we have to change. That means we need to have a real conversation about decarceration and prison abolition in this country.
I think she made that up.
Oh. I'm trying to read the word. It's like decarceration. That's not a word clearly, but yeah. Abolish prisons, Randy. What do you think?
Oh, I can't possibly see anything wrong with that. I mean, that sounds like a very reasonable thing to do.
Hey, what could go wrong? I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
That would remind me of that. Of course, she's from New York. Figures. That reminds me of that movie. Remember with Kurt Russell, Escape from New York, where Manhattan is the whole Manhattan is a prison.
Well, that's about to happen if she gets her way. And the scary part is, I mean, she's like the figurehead for a whole generation at this point on the left. Somehow she's harnessed social media in a way that people take her serious. That's scary. Like with the kind of language and just ridiculousness that she comes out with, like the Green New Deal. No cars, no cows. Okay, sounds great. It's scary though, Randy, that she has so much influence already, that she's even getting some influence in the House. She's a freshman congressman who's never done anything.
Have you ever seen anything as bizarre as this? You get a creature like that who gets elected basically on an influence. From what I understand, she was basically a made up candidate. She was recruited from this very shadowy and very, very wealthy organization. And she was manufactured. Now, because if you look at what she has raised from from her own fundraising. You know that fundraising, of course, that's all they do when, you know, is to get reelected. You know how much money she collected from people in New York in her area? You're going to love this. $16.
Are you kidding me?
No, dead serious. $16. That's what she's reported. But millions of dollars are being put into her account from all of these George Soros based organizations. And this is, but here you just hit it on the head, man. She's actually getting all this media attention, and who could possibly take her seriously in any other place? Who could ever take her seriously?
She's not qualified to be on a city council of anywhere. She's not qualified for any of this. And look, I'm all for young people getting into politics. That's great. But literally the things that she proposes are not even remotely feasible or sane. I mean, there's multiple things that she's after that would absolutely just destroy our nation, to be honest. I mean, we're talking everything from the Green New Deal, which is what it is. It's just impossible, to abolishing prisons now. Like that's where we're going. It is very scary what's happening in politics, because it's becoming a popularity contest on social. And then when they find these right people and someone like George Soros can come in and put millions and millions and millions of dollars behind them and create this persona online, and they're getting elected, that is terrifying.
It is terrifying. You and I, if somebody told us 5 years ago that this could be a possibility, we'd have laughed at him and go, get the hell out of here. And yet this bizarro politics is now to the point where even the quote mainstream unquote candidates are absorbing and coming out with their own versions of this radical insanity.
She's pushed Pelosi so far left. It's scary. And she's a freshman do nothing. Like, it is just insane. I don't know where this ends. I hope it doesn't continue. Can you imagine AOC as speaker?
Oh my God, please. You just made me nauseous.
Your ears are bleeding now.
Oh my
God.
I mean, and you know what? Anything is possible now. Watching this complete circus take place, you know, talking about during Police Week, which was May, there was a bill put out and voted on by the Senate that would aid injured police officers. The Public Safety Officer Benefit Bill would have streamlined the methodology for getting critically injured cops some financial aid, right? And it passed through Senate. Everything was great. Well, you know what? It's been sitting there in Congress since then, and they've never even brought it up because they're so busy doing nothing that they couldn't care less about these severely injured and disabled police officers. All it requires is them to bring this to a vote, but they are so busy doing nothing that these men and women are literally languishing. It's absolutely disgusting, and nobody is talking about it.
It's absolutely gross. Their politics get in the way of doing what's right, period. There's nobody sane who puts thought into it that would not vote for that. Like, what's
exactly
the argument against that? Like, even if you're anti-police, you know, you have some of those tendencies, what would be the thing to vote against this, right? So they just won't even bring it to a vote. They're going to ignore it. It's not going to get passed, and it's all about politics, just because they don't want to appear to be pro-police. Like, you look at how interesting it is, like, with, like, Kamala Harris, right? With her being an ex-DA, she gets attacked from her own because they see her as too pro law enforcement. So it doesn't matter what you run on or anything. If you have a law enforcement connection or you have any pro law enforcement tendencies, you are now bad on the left. So this is just going to continue.
This is, you're absolutely right. And I don't see any compassion, any empathy. But what's interesting is that through the Senate, that bill went sailed through 100%. Even those that have been anti-law enforcement, individuals, even they voted for it in the Senate. But yet you can't get Congress to do anything at all.
Pelosi needs to do her job.
Yeah. Period. Yeah, exactly.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I want to talk about some good policing.
Ooh,
a couple somewhat positive things. I want to talk about this this case that came up, basically solving 95 murders. So a guy gets arrested. Samuel Little is this animal's name. And Samuel Little has now been discovered to be the most prolific serial killer in the United States history, with 95 claimed murder victims. But what's interesting is this guy was on a rampage for decades and decades. He's now like 70 some years old. He got arrested for murder in California, and he strangled. He's a strangler. Well, what's interesting is he got arrested in California, sentenced to prison, and a cold case investigator from the Texas Rangers saw that some cold old cases in Texas. He saw that there was a the MO was identical, and did some research and found that this suspect had lived in his area where these murders took place. And this Texas Ranger was able to, through his skill as an interviewer, got this guy to give up all of the killings that he did.
what great police work, right? Like, hats off to that investigator, his whole team, everyone, but hats off to cold case crews. Like, that's some of the most intense police work you're going to see, the most menial, like, work that you have to do. So, like, they're following up leads and cases that are so old information, re-interviewing people, really going through these cold cases just with a fine-tooth comb, and these investigators that are good at it excel at it. Great police work, right? And just to get to an interview room with him is huge, but then getting him to talk, someone who is obviously just a complete psychopath, and to get them to give that up, it's great work. I love to hear stories like that.
Me too. And this guy should be, this detective or this ranger should be being heralded all over the news, but you really haven't heard that much about it, have you?
Nope. It's pro law enforcement, Randy. So, you know, that takes the back page or page five on their websites, and we're not going to be talking about that too much.
The most prolific serial killer in United States history. So I one of the things that I find fascinating about this, and also gives me some encouragement that there is some decent, you know, police leadership someplace every now and then, is that they allowed, he's a Texas Ranger, he was allowed to spend weeks in California debriefing this guy. And here's what's kind of interesting as well. This suspect has a photographic memory. And not only was he able to tell about every place and every victim, he actually sketched out every victim. I mean, I've never heard anything like this.
No, I've never heard of anything like that. Being able to recall that much information, that's just insane. Can you imagine what the report looks like on this? Like, how many pages is this one? How many thousands of pages just from the Texas chapters of this report? I can't even imagine the amount of work that was put into these cases to get the confession and just to push it through. So, yeah, it's a photographic memory on a complete psycho serial killer. That's a scary thought. I would love to see the case report on this though.
It's got to be. So they have identified, I think 50 of the victims from his, from this officer's report. So, I mean, that's amazing. And, I'm going to make a forecast book/movie deal.
Oh, please. I hope so. Like, if anybody deserves it, is this copper down there doing that kind of work? Clearing 50 identified homicides?
No, 95.
Well, oh, but where they found the victims is what I mean. But
yeah, they're working on the rest of them, identifying the victims. So, awesome. Yes.
Yeah. Great police work, though.
So, there's another somewhat positive story. When I say positive, at least it shows that there are great people out there. And this is a case out of Rochester, New York. A man whose brutal knife attack on a Rochester police officer Friday was stopped by Good Samaritans. And this guy has just pled not guilty. But this guy came out and stabbing this police officer who was investigating a domestic. And three citizens ran in to aid him. Strangers, didn't know him. Just saw that he was in trouble, ran in, actually held the suspect down, overpowered the suspect, and then using the officer's radio, got him help.
That's awesome. I love to hear when citizens do the right thing and prove that there's really a lot of good people out there. Because sometimes we do all the negative stories. We do all the injured and killed law enforcement officers. We're seeing all those stories. We sit here and watch all these videos all day and body cams and shootings and pursuits, but it is great to hear that citizens jumped in and helped this man. There was one yesterday just like it, out in LA County Sheriff. An LA County Sheriff had someone on top of them beating them. A bystander jumped out of their car, tackled the man and took him out and was able to help get that person in custody. That happened yesterday, despite Gavin Newsom taking away the posse comitatus law. So even though they weren't required to do it, they still did it, which just means there's good people. So I love to hear these stories. Citizens should be on our side like this. The scary part is when the media makes police look so terrible, I hope that it doesn't keep these things from happening. If that makes sense.
You know, no, like exactly.
Skewing people's feelings about the police is a scary thought.
You know, there's I read a home, you know, I was a cop in New Jersey for 10 years before I joined the Las Vegas PD. And I was in a town called Princeton. And one of the neighboring communities is Lawrence Township. And I worked with those guys a lot during my time there. I'm sure they're all long since retired, since it's been decades. I hate to think in terms of decades of my career. But
yeah, don't do it. It's just my name.
But a headline popped out today, and I had to smile. Here, this is kind of interesting. Cops file whistleblower suit against township and police chief for illegal quotas. Yeah. So, you know, I remember being a cop there, and I was literally, you were evaluated on your how many tickets you wrote. That's what you were evaluated on. They didn't care about how many arrests you made or how many, you know, what all the good stuff you did. All they cared about was how many quote movers unquote did you write. So you wound up, you know, we didn't have a quota per se. But here, this is interesting. So a group of law enforcement officers has blown the whistle on Lawrence Township and its police chief, accusing them of enforcing illegal ticket quotas as a means of generating income for the municipality. Now, in addition to that, they're also filing a retaliation lawsuit, because when they brought it to the attention of the prosecutor's office, they suddenly found themselves facing the wrath of this police chief. And so the Mercer County prosecutor, even when they were advised that this was happening, basically blew it off. So there we have this embarrassing incident where cops are being not only told to write tickets, but impound cars. So who gets screwed on this deal? The citizens.
100%. And it just makes them dislike police even more. When you're forcing these kinds of these contacts and taking away the discretion of officers doing their job and you know, pulling over cars, looking for bad guys. And if they feel pressured to have to do traffic enforcement to keep their position or whatever, you know, goodwill they have with their supervision, that kind of thing, you're just going to piss off the citizens. You know, I've got a confession to make. I don't think I've ever publicly said this. 17 years sworn, and I have ridden, guess how many speeders I've ridden in my entire career? Zero. I've literally never worked traffic, Randy. I worked crime. I tried to take people to jail. I looked for guns and dopes and stolen cars, right? To take, like, and make traffic and revenue collection the focus, it's horrible. That stuff needs to go away forever. We're trying to build these bridges with the community that everyone else is trying to rip apart, and traffic quotas are not going to do that.
Like I said, in New Jersey, you had to write tickets. That was that was the deal, right? But I was so happy when I came over to Las Vegas PD. I never wrote another ticket.
See, there you go.
I never wrote another ticket. Here in Vegas, they wanted you to fight crime.
We had traffic. Both agencies I've worked for had crime cars and traffic cars. Traffic, and it was great. Every once in a while, you might get stuck with a TC if everyone's tied up or whatever, but that wasn't the focus. They wanted bad guys off the street. So
weaponizing
your entire agency to go write tickets as revenue collectors basically plays into the narrative of all the cop haters that we're just tax collectors out there.
Yeah. You know,
government tyrants. Yeah, pretty much. Like in that case, I would agree.
So let me tell you how chicken shit these people are in Lawrence Township. They had to pay a $300 fine or impound fee at the lobby of the police department, right? So they have an ATM machine in there, but they rigged the ATM machine so that it only dispenses $200 at a time, so they could get a second fee out of these people.
Wow.
That's, tell me if that isn't the I mean, talk about chicken shit. Oh my God. Let's try to wring out another $6 fee out of these poor people who had their car impounded for nothing anyway.
That is insane. Like, and those are the people in your community that you're trying to get on the side of the police, right? The same people, like minor traffic infractions. I got it. Makes a lot of sense.
It is just incredible. Now here's an item that I got to shake my head at, because I'm actually going to say something nice about Gavin Newsom.
Whoa. All right.
I have to. And the California lawmakers. I never thought that this day would come, but I have to, because they actually passed a law that is actually helpful to police and first responders. New California laws to help responders with trauma and mental health issues. They've passed a law. California firefighters and first responders, notice they put firefighters and not cops, right? But I just want to mention that. Now have a stronger chance at earning workers' compensation when they are diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder from job-related injuries. And Newsom's office announced that he signed this bill to create a rebuttable presumption that a worker's mental health struggles are an occupational injury, which could qualify them for paid time off to recover.
Wow.
So I know it. I'm shocked.
I'm going to agree with that governor for the first time. I'm a California guy, and that's the first thing I've agreed with him on. And hats off to him for doing that. That is needed. The battle that cops go through when things go wrong, whether it's, you know, medically or mentally or stress, whatever it is, it's you instantly turn into a fight with your departments, with workers' comp. Like there's a whole horrible administrative process these guys have to go through. So anything that speeds that up or makes it easier for them to navigate through it, all for it. That's great.
Because as the founder of the Wounded Blue, the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement Officers, I'm heavily involved in this topic. And it is shocking, not only the number of officers who are facing psychological injury and emotional injury. In many states, if an officer even asks for help, they can be fired. It's
insane.
It is insane. In this day and age, there are states which do not recognize post-traumatic stress as an on-the-job injury.
It's crazy. And there's still many, 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 many agencies where I guarantee that their officers would think more than once about disclosing that they may have PTSD to their administration, because they're going to be ripped off the street. They're going to get their gun taken away, all of these things. So more protections, the better. And you've been doing amazing work at the Wounded Blue. And if everyone hasn't checked that out yet, they need to.
Well, you know, I'm actually about to launch something. The Wounded Blue is about to launch an incredible new benefit. And that is, it's called CAPR, the Confidential Assistance Program for Emergency Responders. Ray, this is amazing. What we've been able to do is create a relationship with a national behavioral health organization, which will, by becoming a member of the Wounded Blue, a law enforcement officer, for $10 a month, will get access to licensed psychologists from the privacy of their own home via video conferencing to aid them in post-traumatic stress and other stressors. And this is groundbreaking.
That's fantastic. And then that gives them, these officers, the opportunity to do it without maybe, you know, going to their department if they're not really in the know about how PTSD works or any of these issues. So giving them an outlet, that is awesome. I cannot wait until the membership program goes online. And I know it's coming very soon.
It is. And the other part of this is who's hurting when the police officer is hurting? The family. Well, guess what? These officers can opt in for just another couple of dollars to have their families represented in this manner as well. So they'll all have access to licensed psychologists for $10 a month.
That's awesome. So thewoundedblue.org, right, Randy?
Thewoundedblue.org, exactly. And if you are an officer and you're struggling, with either, you know, on-the-job injuries that you feel like you've been abandoned. That's what we do. We provide peer support for those men and women. So it's Wounded Blue is really becoming an amazing organization, as I knew it would be, because of the absolute dedication that our peer team advocates are involved in. They're literally all volunteers. Every one of these men and women has been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, and screwed over. And they're all over the country now. So we've created an amazing team of individuals that are dedicated to helping their brothers and sisters. And all you've got to do is reach out to us at thewoundedblue.org. There's no charge for anything here.
And there's some exciting things in the works that I cannot wait until they get into play, because this is going to be a very large organization very soon.
So a couple other things, you know, we're kind of winding down here because, you know, our time period. But there's a couple other things I want to talk about. And one is this continual use of 13 seconds of videotape that people are taking on their iPhones of police officers in use of force situations, and then weaponizing that against these officers. There was here I'm going to read the headline and I'll tell you about it. Three Minnesota, of course, Minneapolis, three Minneapolis officers in video of teens arrest are focus of inquiry. Yeah, they're focus of inquiry. So there was a 13-year-old girl who is already a career criminal, by the way. She's been arrested numerous times for violent stuff. And they tried to warn her. She was trespassing, told her to leave. She said no. They went to arrest her, and she started kicking and spitting on and punching the police. And they had to use force to arrest her. Well, you would think that this was the Rodney King beating by the publicity here, demanding justice, quote unquote, demanding the police officers get fired. And I saw the video. You got a combative subject, you got to take him into custody. And yet it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how justified the police are. Just the same thing as this shooting the other day where it's on video, the guy points the gun at the cop, the cops kill him, and they're claiming that it was planted. So it honestly, this insanity that is taking place societally where the police are blamed for even saving their own lives. They're not even allowed to do that anymore in the court of some public opinion.
100%. There's the big thing going on is, you know, these little viral clips. Everyone is just so obsessed with being internet famous, right? So these little clips get out, and then the news gets a hold of them, and they want to tell a story. They want to show a narrative of these big mean cops beating up this poor 13-year-old girl. And then you sit back and go, well, wait a minute. What are these guys supposed to do? How are they supposed to do this any differently? Are they supposed to just get kicked and punched and spit on because the suspect's 13? But how does that change anything? How does it change the fact that all of these actions are made by the suspect? And she's a, you know, raised by her parents. There's other people responsible for her behavior. It's not the police that are responsible for it every time. And that's just all you see. This every one of these little clips that comes out. They'll take the worst of the worst of the worst. They don't show what led up to it. There's no backstory. And it's just, it's our clickbait mentality. That's all this is. And
have you ever seen a police use of force that looks good?
No, they're ugly. It's a fight. People get hurt. Like, force is ugly. Like, you have to overpower people and stop them from resisting. It's not pretty ever. On video, it's never going to be pretty, but it's real. The thing with video for me in policing is it's been good. It clears a lot of things up, like in body cams and stuff. It shows, you know, it cleans shootings up as far as justification, but it shows a harsh reality of what it really is out there. And a lot of people aren't ready to understand and believe it. Out on the street as a cop, it's good and evil. And there's bad things that happen and people get hurt and people hurt each other. And it's ugly. It's an ugly world sometimes.
It is. That's the real world that cops have to reside in. You know, I was given an interview the other day about the dangers of being a cop. And when I told the guy who was interviewing me that last year 57,000 police officers were physically assaulted, there was silence on the other end of the phone. I mean, it was, wait a minute, what's that number again? 57,000 law enforcement officers were physically assaulted last year. And the number has been climbing every year. That's, you know, it's been hovering around 50,000 for a long time. But last year it was 57,000. And they can, you know, and these type of situations, this is where the rubber meets the road when it comes down to being a cop. And you better be, when it comes down to actually physical confrontation, if you can't handle yourself, you better go find another job, because you're going to wind up seriously hurt or dead.
The scary part is the second guessing that's going to happen from all this bad exposure over and over and over anti-police. That's when cops get hurt, is when they're second guessing because they don't want to get in trouble with force. When it's time to use force, it's time to use it, and to use it effectively. You get guys that wait too long, second guess themselves, and all those things happen, and officers get hurt. It's not the right way to go about it at all. You know?
Unfortunately, use of force training has become so dumbed down in many jurisdictions because the political powers that be have basically eroded that training, and substituted more politically correct training instead.
Well, yeah, the mandatory racial profiling and gender identification or whatever they're teaching these days, right? Like, and to get back to the actual real world violence of use of force, I mean, look, I never got shot. I got shot at a bunch of times. I got slashed with a knife. I had my cornea scratched. I dislocated shoulders, broke my hands. Like, that's normal cop stuff. Like, force is ugly. It's always going to be ugly. So, I don't know. I just wish it was a little different, but I think with social media, man, this is just not going to stop the way that they present us out there. I don't see it changing, unfortunately.
And the other unfortunate part of this narrative is that the lawmakers in many of these jurisdictions are part of the problem and not part of the solution. There was an article that came out because there is a new law in the state of New York, and they must be doing the carbon copy of California. They're getting crazier and crazier and crazier. Now that they're basically, there's going to be no bail anymore. They're just going to release people, and that's it.
Wow.
Because of, you know, the pressure from activist groups and the ACLU, et cetera, and so forth. It says, this is from the district attorney. You're going to love this. We will no longer call people who are arrested defendants. Ugh. After January 1st of 2020, they will now be known as principals of the case.
Wow.
And the rest of the law just goes downhill from there. It seems to become a race for the absurd between New York and California. And
I think it's Frisco that just did the same thing, right? Like, San Francisco changed it from inmates and parolees to previously incarcerated.
Yeah.
Right. Like that was their big change.
Well, you know, the federal Department of Justice did that under the Obama administration. They did the same thing. And in fact, the San Francisco just mirrored what the Obama administration did. It's absurd. So anyway, we're getting close to the end of our time, and I want to honor two officers who lost their lives in the line of duty, as we do here on our end of watch. First is Police Officer Derek Bishop of the New York City Police Department. Police Officer Derek Bishop died as a result of the cancer that he developed following his assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center site following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Officer Bishop served with the New York City Police Department for 21 years, was assigned to the 71st Precinct. He is survived by his wife, two daughters, mother, and brother. Police Officer Derek Bishop, New York City Police Department, New York. End of watch, Thursday, September 19th, 2019. And the second is Border Patrol Agent Robert Houghton of the United States Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection. Border Patrol Agent Robert Houghton died while attempting to locate a group of seven suspected illegal aliens in the area of Mount Washington in Arizona. He and two other agents had gone to the area after a ground sensor was activated at 1 p.m., indicating the seven subjects were in the area. During the ensuing search, one of the subjects was taken into custody. The agents began a search for Agent Houghton when he failed to respond to radio transmissions. He was found unresponsive with a head injury, possibly falling on rocks at approximately 4:15. Due to the remote and rugged nature of the location, they were unable to immediately move him for transport. Agents performed CPR and provided medical aid for over 2 hours till he could be carried down the steep mountainside. He was flown to a hospital in Nogales, where he was pronounced dead. An investigation is underway to determine what caused his injuries. He had served with the United States Border Patrol for 10 years and was assigned to the Tucson sector. He is survived by his wife, son, mother, brother, and sister. Border Patrol Agent Robert Houghton, United States Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection, end of watch, Sunday, October 6, 2019. Two more officers who gave their lives in the line of duty for their community and the people that they serve. May they rest in peace. There's something very important I want you to do for me. If you've been listening to the Voice of American Law Enforcement for any time, you know that we are very dedicated to the law enforcement community here. I would like you to go to a website. It's www.thewoundedblue.org. I want you to read about how we at this organization are aiding injured and disabled law enforcement officers. If you are a law enforcement officer and you have been injured or disabled and you feel forgotten and alone, this is why we exist. We have a fully trained peer support team, all made of police officers who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, and screwed up. They know what you're going through, and we exist for you. You are the part of the Blue family, and you deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. Unfortunately, many police agencies and cities do not treat their officers with respect and dignity when they are injured, either physically or emotionally. So go to thewoundedblue.org. If you are a citizen and you want to help, please check out how you can join the Wounded Blue. And if you're a police officer or have been, exist for you. So check out thewoundedblue.org. Now, I would also urge you to see our film. It is on Amazon, it is on iTunes, it's the Microsoft Store, it's pretty much every platform you can imagine. It's called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. You would be shocked at how the men and women of this, you know, the law enforcement community in this country, many are being treated with such disrespect. Many people, most people, even cops, believe that if you are severely injured in the line of duty, you're going to be taken care of financially and emotionally. In many cases, that is not true. Please watch the film and help the Wounded Blue. That's about all the time we've got, Ray. So once again, I thank you for joining me on this episode of Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement.